Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West. Issue 21.5.
Woo!
Yes, as our loyal fans and compulsory listeners will know, we are doing a special 21st birthday episode soon where we will get drunk and yell at each other.
Just so you guys know, my girlfriend's super excited to see me get trashed. Just so you all know.
But for those of you who still enjoy listening to the sober versions of us,
there will be whiskey in my coffee soon.
Right now we're just drinking regular coffee and we're going to go through some regular reviews.
I don't know what everybody's talking about.
I'm fine.
I love you guys.
Yeah. I'm just really tired.
Before we get into some shitty jokes, I guess I'll start off with some shitty comics.
This is what? We're recording. This is what? 3 minutes into the recording, I've literally almost shot coffee through my nose twice.
Thus far.
Oh, teehee. We're coming up with Capes and Skulls West stand-up, which will be released soon.
I'm also wondering if we might have to get a microphone one day because we just spit coffee everywhere.
Oh, God. Yeah,
thank you to Griffin Games and Comics for the microphone that we do have right now.
We
<Yeah.
laughs> promise not to ruin it.
Yeah, I don't want them to have to... I don't think they'd reimburse me for a new laptop that got coffee spit all over it. Starting out with one that's like, I'm a little torn about not liking. This is Cave Carson Has an Interstellar Eye, issue number one, written by John Rivera, with art by Michael Avon Oeming? Oeming? Sorry, Michael, for your last name there.
We tried.
I really liked a lot of this. Like, it has good characterization, there's interesting artwork, it's very psychedelic, there's a lot of, it has well-written dialogue, sometimes a little bit too forced. The problem I have with this so far is I'm running into, like, an America problem where anybody who's
America,
read America, as in America Chavez, Miss America, the current run.
I'm so stuck in like Montana.
Tell you, yeah.
America!
There's just too much going on for one comic. And not in like a good way, in a way that everything seems to be like a subplot. And so I have no idea like what's important, like what I should care about, what's going to be important later, anything like that. Like, it's issue number one, and although I know what's going on in it, I don't know what to care about, what to emotionally latch on to.
I'm curious then if you went back and reread Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye and then jumped into this, because it is like the pseudo continuation.
No, I never read any Cave Carson before.
Yeah, because this is like second wave of Young Animal along with Mother Panic, Gotham AD.
Yeah.
I
fucking love Gotham AD.
Yeah, so I figured a number one would be a good place to jump onto. But not in this case. I don't know if it's a continuation. I understood everything that's going on in it, although like maybe there's backstories for the characters a little bit more. Not really necessary, because like I said, they did a good job of characterizing everything. There's just too much going on in a way that's not necessarily good.
I love Oeming's arc though.
Yeah, no, like I said, like, art is fantastic. It's, like, really, like, psychedelic cartoon kind of art.
Okay, so I won't be reading. All right.
Yeah. It's got the word interstellar in it. It means it has space stuff.
Yeah, like, look at that page.
That's
that's, like, a really cool page and really cool borders and really well
set. I saw that, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Maybe just, like, look
not
at it,
not throw up
I guess.
In a bad way, but throw up in as in, like, I can see the motion sickness if this was a real thing.
Yeah.
If that makes any sort of sense. It's really pretty. I just can visualize the motion sickness.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's really just meh. Just If it latches on to its where it's going, then it'll be good. But so far, meh. Moving on to something that's entirely crap. I have Iron Man Hong Kong Heroes number 1, written by Howard Wong, with art by Justice Wong. Brother and brother team, maybe? Brother and sister?
Is this kind of one of the ones where we talked about last time that it doesn't give its readers enough credit?
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. Like, this is...
is it, like, spoon-fed story?
This is an example of what you should not do for writing-wise. Like, everything... This is... If you want a good example of overly explained dialogue in it, like if I was reading this and I was like, if you're able to read, you're able to pick up on more context clues than this gives its readers credit for.
This book was bad. Like, guys. I don't even know what else.
Like, from the first page, you just have, like, Doctor Strange, like, explaining everything, like, to himself, basically, in a narration. There's not even, like, an audience avatar, like, an Inception, that you can have Leonardo DiCaprio explaining things to. This is just, like, explaining things.
So he's like, just talking okay, so to himself.
I mentioned this to Nat, but, like, one of the things that, like, I almost stopped reading this halfway through the comic. It's, like, there's at the Stark Expo, and there's a line, "Let's give it up for King T'Challa and Dr. Banner's thrilling talks on Wakandan technology and gamma radiation." T'Challa talking about Wakandan technology and Bruce Banner talking about gamma radiation, that's, like, literally the most generic thing you can think of. Like, that would be like, "Thank you very much, Neil deGrasse Tyson, for your talk on space."
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, these are, like... I don't know, like, put some goddamn thought into your fucking exposition here.
After reading this book, I have the question of, who is this for? Like, I can't figure that out.
I wouldn't recommend this to young comic readers. It feels like the really, really, really crappy versions of, like, golden age, like, narration, where they're like, "Look, he has the interstellar cube that was created 40 years ago from the heart of the sun."
But I like those, though, because it's, like, the classics, that just feels like a very, very bad take on
classics. Well, it's interesting if you're doing it in that, like, a tongue-in-cheek way now. Uh-huh. And, like, really playing off that style, but I don't know if this is that, or if it's that they don't know how to write.
That's awkward.
Yeah, no, it's...
That's a little awkward.
It's just poor... Like, everything... This is telling and not showing. Like, writing show, don't tell. Like, this is all telling. And, like, 3/4 of the comic is just, like, a really shitty fight scene. That, like, then the Avengers show up halfway through, and then they're just fighting more robots, and, like, why? Like, you could have easily taken out about half this comic and still had the same story from it. It's just... It's basically like watching a car chase in a comic. You're, like... Maybe if this was, like, animated, it would be cool, but since it's just, like, panel by panel, I'm fucking done with this. Like, I'm getting mad at myself for, like, continuing to hold this. Yeah.
He's like, this is in my hand. Why?
What is Griffin Games and Comics return policy, Matt? This is a good time to bring up this question.
We don't return red comic
books. Well, it's $4 I'm never getting back.
It's really interesting that you mentioned the money, because I read that and I'm like, well, there's 20 minutes I'm never getting back.
Yeah, $4 and 20 minutes that I'm never getting back. Yeah, I could have had 20 more minutes of sleep last night. And I much would have preferred that.
Well, we were slaying that book.
God, terrible. Iron Man Hong Kong Heroes, don't even look at it. Don't acknowledge that it exists.
Hey, I still have copies of that thing on the shelves.
Yeah, you should put it behind the other comics. Like,
oh my god, he's just like walking around the flamethrower at this point.
Like, do me a favor and don't sell it to anyone. like this.
That's why you still have copies of it on the shelf.
Like,
it's not selling itself right now.
Good. Can I burn them when you don't sell them, please?
Actually, $4 a pop.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna go home and burn the one I have because I'm not using it to take up space in my box.
Okay. I have a side anecdote. Could you at least record it for the fans?
Sure. Let's hear it.
No, just like record on do a Facebook video. Burning the.
Check Facebook later for me burning Iron Man Heroes. So moving on to more Iron Man things. This is the Invincible Iron Man number 598. I started reading this a while ago. This is written by Brian Michael Bendis, arts is Stefano Caselli and Alex Maleev. I'm really bad at names today.
I'm just too upset to.
So I've been reading this since the Riri Williams story arc begun because I was like, oh, cool, Iron Man gets a protege. How does that deal with stuff? And it's been good so far, interesting. It's just getting stale, honestly. Like, for me, and Brian Michael Bendis is leaving. All his other books he's left with a bang, and this one he's like, I don't even care anymore. And so, like, I don't care personally, and whoever's on it next I think might care, but I don't really care to see if they care. So I'm done caring. I'm just not reading Iron Man anymore.
Caring.
That's my take on that. What else do you have for us, guys? Gal?
So, to continue on our negative note, apparently, I have Batman Sins of the Father number 2. No.
Is this a sin of Batman?
Yes. Actually, you're totally correct. Like, I've always known Batman to be a martyr, but he's a silent martyr. This Batman is not silent about his martyring, and I don't want to hear about it.
I just like that. That statement is so weird. I'm not silent about my martyring.
He's not.
Everyone listen to me. I'm a martyr.
He's like, my dad was a bad person. I must be a bad person. I'm like, you're a logical human being. When has that ever... What?
I'm just getting, like, flashes to that College Humor Batman thing. Get over your dead parents, Clark. Wait, aren't your parents dead, too?
You're just sleeping.
I was a boy, and now I'm a bat.
Legitimately exactly how I feel about this right now.
We were off the rails today.
Yeah.
It's gone. It doesn't feel like a Batman story. We've heard that the Telltale series is really, really good. It hasn't translated very well to the comic at all. Because I'm reading this and I'm like, no one looks like Batman. Like, they don't look like Batman characters. They don't feel like Batman characters. And I'm just...
Yeah, that body armor does not feel squishy at all. It's too metallic. Like, I'm just being an asshole.
But it's just like... Yeah, I'm done reading it is basically the point I'm getting to. Like, I don't care about it. It has not piqued my interest. Like, I've heard the Telltale series, like, game-wise is amazing and the story is great in it. For some reason, it did not translate.
It's one of my favorite things about Batman's armor is how he, like, draws abs on top of his armor.
You mean abs over his abs?
Yeah, basically.
So that criminals think I have giant abs.
Basically. They're like,
man, I can't shoot him there. There's so much abs.
Yeah, basically.
So... MK's too.
Instead, they're going to shoot me in my face.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Alright, so on that note...
What else do you have for us, Kat?
Mira, Queen of Atlantis. So the first one, I liked. The second one, I keep getting berated with the same storyline from the first one about how she's just like, I just want to be with Aquaman. I love him so much, and we don't need words because we love each other. And I'm like, oh, God, make it stop.
I don't even know. I'm not sure I can review anything today at this point.
But that's basically what it is. It's, it sucks because she's just like, we don't need words. Like, that's a legitimate panel in this comic. We don't need words because of the love between us. And I'm like, I don't. All right.
But here are words to express how we don't need
words. Oh,
my
God. I get it. I get their relationship. So Aquaman has the ability to use telepathy to talk to fish. And since she's a native Atlantean, she's part fish. So they don't actually need to talk because he can communicate with her telepathically.
Boom. Solved.
Fish people.
Nice. And then Ocean Master. I've not really had a lot of comic, like, interaction with Aquaman and his villains like Ocean Master. I don't really like him in this comic. He's not a very good, like, Ocean Master, and I don't know anything about Ocean Master. He literally spends most of his comic talking shit to her because she's not the queen of Atlantis. She's just some dirty scum. I'm the king of it. Yeah, we're done. Like, it's done.
I'm waiting for you to say Ocean Master one more time.
Who's the villain in this again, Kat?
Fucking Ocean Master.
Orm? Is that his name?
Yeah. I don't understand. Can someone explain to me, like, the family relations? Because I was getting the feeling of incest in this book a little bit.
Yeah, it's like good old, you know, the good old days.
It's a story about kings and queens. There's totally incest in this. Have you
he
not?
He called him, like, Atlantis? His half-brother. I'm confused because I thought that, what's his name? That was his half-brother. And if that means that's his half-sister, then what?
I mean, if
you
think about
the family relations in this book scream a little bit of incest, and it might just be because I don't know.
Geographically, Atlantis being so far below the sea, it's like pretty far in the deep south, you know?
I'm not reading that anymore either.
Only a few letters away from Atlanta.
Alright, moving on.
I'm gonna do my best to
get through this.
Yeah, okay. So I went backwards a little bit to early in March. I read Scales and Scoundrels number 7, written by Sebastian Gerner with art by Galad. Galad, you're a fantastic artist. Could you reveal your first name or your last name? Because finding your art online, very hard. Because apparently Galad is a very common French name. Yeah. I did find your Twitter account. Thank you.
Stemming from that, we can't find much else, apparently.
No, I can't. And I want to see more sketches because they're wonderful. This is a great book. This is a fantasy, like, Dungeons & Dragons type story that appeals to all ages. It was originally billed as sort of a Game of Thrones for teenagers. Yeah, I know what you're all thinking. That cuts out a lot of the greatest parts of Game of Thrones.
Oh, you mean like the incest?
I'm not saying that that's cut out of this yet.
Oh, God.
No. I feel like there would just be like more sex scenes. They'd just be like kissing scenes.
Lots of just making out intensely.
I just like flew back to toilet. I'm
Where
sorry.
Are we? Like, I don't even know. But this is a really like, so I, not only did I read issue 7, but I actually reread the rest of the series. And I have now, I'm starting to pull this again because it's just really great to pick up something and have a good time with it and not worry about the incest and poor characterization.
We really need to, like, shove out of the incest.
Yeah. But, yeah, this is really cool. This had a dragon fight, which I thought was pretty sweet. Like, I hadn't seen something just fun high fantasy like that in a long time. And, yeah, just I think this is one of those, if you're looking for a fantasy book, a fantasy comic book to read, this is a joy just to pick up each individual issue. And it ramps up. It gets better at, like, from issue 4 through 7 is just fantastic. So I'm gonna end that review saying yay!
Yay!
Positivity! I'm hoping there's more.
What's that?
Yeah, I guess, well, with that positivity, I'll move into some other positivity.
Yay!
This is Lucy Dreaming, number 1 of 5. I didn't even realize there was a miniseries.
Even
this
better.
Is out of Boom Studios, written by Max Bemis.
Maybe booming right now, I'm
and
sorry.
And Michael Dialanis? God Damn, these. I'm just having like the worst time with names today.
You just say it with confidence. Nobody will know.
Max Bemis and Michael Dialanis.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Sure, why not? This is by far the best book I read in the past 2 weeks, and that includes like all the pulls that I have.
It's a bit of a stack.
Yeah, I read probably 15 comics this past 2 weeks, and this is definitely my favorite, and I'm really sad now that it's only 5 because, damn, like, this is, we're following, gosh, I forget the main character's name. It's, Lucy. Wow. Yes, Lucid Dreaming, number one.
I swear to you, this is not the drunk episode.
God damn it. Anyway, so
just Lucy, up and go home.
The main character, looks like 9th grade, I'm assuming. A bit of a social outcast, just basically nose stuck in a book, escapism. I may or may not relate to that high school experience.
I think we all can.
And then she goes to sleep and basically wakes up, like, in one of her books where it's, like, this Star Wars parody, basically, and she's, like, this princess, and there's, like, all these different things, and there's, like, this Han Solo kind of guy with a weird Force-type thing,
yep.
And he's like, I love you, princess, and she's like, what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, I know, I can't talk about it because our love is forbidden, and all this stuff. At one point, she just, like, shoots this random alien, like, they're in a firefight.
Oh, yeah.
And she just shoots it, and she's like, oh, man, I can't believe I shot an alien. And then it, like, there's just one panel, or a few panels of the guy, like, ah, my neck is like knives on my inside. Oh, the blood. Tell my wife and children I'll miss them. And, like,
sounds brutally, like I need to read this.
Brutally dying, and she's like, oh, shit.
I feel even worse now.
She makes like a disgusted comment about it, like, too. Like, she's like, the look on her face is like she's gonna throw up from watching this happen.
Like, that's like, she's like, ugh, that's actually really realistic and disturbing. Like, she thinks this is like a dream the whole time, which obviously it is kind of, but then like, she meets this other guy who's like, wait, you're a dreamer too. And then, like, she wakes up and her parents are there in her room and they're like, ooh, I see, cause her eyes turn yellow too, and they're like, oh, see your eyes there turning yellow, I guess it's time we had the talk. And that's how the first issue ends, so I'm really interested to see where this is going. Amazing,
man.
Amazingly written, like, amazing storyline, really great art. Just all around.
So much fun, too. Just, like,
yeah, a lot of fun. Like, I was cracking up reading this.
That was a big surprise for me in terms of the books that came out over the past 2 weeks. Because, it didn't hit when we went over it in, like, previews, when we were trying to talk over, you know, what upcoming stuff to be excited about.
Yeah.
And I had the same reaction reading through this. Like, I got to the end and went, whoa, what does that mean? Is she an experiment? Like, what's going on?
Experiment.
Yeah, how is everybody not reading this?
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, actually, Michael said it was too whimsical.
Too whimsical? No, like, there's that one part in it that I was just talking about where the guy's, like, brutally dying. Like, my wife and children, tell them I'll miss them.
Calling Deadpool whimsical.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it opens up and she's like, and then they stab each other and then, like, make a feast out of their blood and take a bath in it. And her parents are like, weren't you going to read that book with the werewolves?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That was a good read.
Yeah, it was a good read. I can go on and on about that. But, maybe I'll transition into something else that I'm a little sad is coming to slightly an end. Jessica Jones, number 18. I guess it's coming back. I just want to give a shout-out to this series in general. Brian Michael Bendis's Jessica Jones.
I will
Jones.
Say this. Make sure if you do pick it up, read the letter that he does on the back because it's fucking great.
Oh, yeah. I was super sad. I'm usually not, like, a crime sort of detective, reader either, and this was really great. Just all in all, everything you want and more from, like, from a Private Eye series. Mm-hmm. The character of Jessica Jones is just so amazingly written in this.
I would have to say the best part in this comic is when she literally tells the guy who's having a bad time, no, life fucking sucks!
Yeah.
I have to say, there's a weird thing for me where I look at the cover of this and I'm like, man, that's really a beautiful piece of artwork, but it doesn't look like Jessica Jones to me.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Because it's Kristen Ritter in my head.
Like, oh, now, yeah.
Forever, that's who I see. So
it's
just
Kristen Ritter.
Yeah, so I'm like, that doesn't look like Jessica.
Yeah, you're like, why does she have brown hair in this comic?
Right? It's like, Kristen what Ritter is has this?
Black hair. Yeah. I just, like, one of my favorite parts, and this is, like, speaking so well to Jessica Jones' character, is, like, she's just in her office, and this person walks in who she's never seen before, and her first reaction is, don't be a subpoena.
Yeah.
like, just amazing, like, characterization for
her.
I mean,
I will say this, like, I hadn't been keeping up on Jessica Jones very much. I might actually go through and get some of the back issues, because it is a very good series. But, like, I will say, like, that last issue was pretty great. It was pretty funny. I mean, she legitimately tells a dude who's having a hard time, no, life fucking sucks, dude.
Yeah, she basically, like, sadness from inside out.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's pretty great. And then she gets kicked out of a window and tells him, armadillos don't fly, asshole. And that's, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It makes sense if you read it, just read it.
Yeah. All right. The villain, the armadillo, is in love with a Texan belle. And, yeah.
And he's just trying to find a name for himself, and everybody's talking shit to him the entire time, and no one remembers him.
Yeah.
That's sad, but he's an armadillo.
Why did you pick an armadillo? That's ridiculous. Yeah, people, like, they're making fun of him. It's great.
Armadillo cloak is an amazing magic card, so whatever.
Anyway, what else do y'all have for us?
I mean, I think I can attempt a quick hit of 7.
Okay. Oh my god.
just do a Leander Levitt. Yeah.
Why don't I do Dark Knight's Metal 6 and then you can
rip
through that?
Because
I may have to duck out.
Alright, fair go.
Dark Knight's Metal number 6, written by Scott Snyder, art by Greg Capullo, with a little backup section by
I would just like to point out, since you guys can't see the cover, it's literally like a Joker dragon.
No, this is the most metal fucking cover ever.
Oh no, it is.
Yeah, like,
it legitimately is. Superman, I'm pretty sure, looks like a fucking battle war here and that.
It's the Trinity wearing battle armor.
Yeah, it is
the
Trinity.
Riding a Joker snake.
Oh, it's
coming
a snake?
Or Joker dragon, excuse me. Coming at you, and all of the flames around them are metallic gold.
It's legitimately the most metal thing. If this was a metal CD, I'd buy the CD.
Yeah, I wouldn't even listen to the music necessarily. I just want the cover.
Yeah.
Like, this is so good.
Hang it on the wall.
So this is the end of Metal, and
Oh my god, she looks like a badass.
Oh yeah, this is, they find a new metal. They find 10th metal, which is like
holy shit,
the World Forge itself, and like,
oh my god.
It creates...
Is that Hawk Girl?
That is Hawk Girl, yeah.
Sorry.
this is...
I have like an obsession with her.
there's, you know, you talk about Hong Kong heroes doing a lot of telling and not showing. This is showing you and then saying, figure it out.
I will say this, they look fucking awesome. If they made a poster of that, I'd hang it in my house as wallpaper.
B.A. Aquaman there with his battle armor.
Can I have the Justice League in a poster with all this metal?
Oh, glowing 10th metal batarangs that when they're thrown and stick into you turn into armor. Yeah, this is a love letter to comic books saying, throw the rules out the fucking window. Like, let's just have a blast.
He kicked over a trash can, threw the rules in the trash can, and lit it on fire.
Exactly.
And just started doing, like, headbangs.
Exactly. I'm going to spoil the shit out of this, so sorry, folks. The way that they finally beat the Batman Who Laughs is to do the one thing that Batman would never do. Team with the Joker.
Ta-da.
So, yeah, Batman gives Joker a batarang hatchet and says, have at it. So Joker and our Batman fight against the Batman Who Laughs, who can go toe-to-toe with Bruce because it is Bruce from an alternate dimension. So, yeah, he just...
Really,
I mean, there's a moment where he literally, those are the fingers of the Batman Who Laughs.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just like saying this, and it's like metal.
Yeah, this screams metal. But yeah, in finally defeating the Dark Knights, they literally use the power of the readers and all of the multiverse and break the universe. Essentially, that's if you listen to our issue 21. We talk about Justice League Odyssey, and Justice League Odyssey spins directly out of this because
how none of us will have any money.
Well, they break the source wall. So the end of the known DC universe for basically since its existence is broken. So there's an entirely new level of cosmic beings that we may encounter that are because of metal.
Hawkgirl
is part of the main Justice League team now.
Yeah!
You get to see really funny jokes of the Justice League in super awesome suits. And then the Damian and John do a rock concert at this, like, celebration party.
Of course. Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that Swamp Thing wearing a bow tie?
That is Swamp Thing wearing a bow tie.
Hold up. Is that Baby Darkseid?
Yeah, it's Baby Darkseid.
Darkseid!
He grows up to be a member of the Cosmic Justice League.
Baby Darkseid.
Nice.
Baby Darkseid. Yeah, this is nuts. If you really want to follow, like, a super heavy, story-driven, you know, like, a narrative that makes you deep think, this is not the book for you. If you want something that makes you think about the history of DC Comics and all of the craziness that exists in comic books, this is the book for you.
Metal!
And yeah, it is super metal and great and sort of like the love letter to the readers of sticking around and being on an epic, insane journey. It got me a little teary-eyed, actually, because it was this idea of like just being part of the story and being part of why creators still do what they do.
Fuck yeah.
Nice.
All right, since you went on Dark Metal number 6, we're going to top that with going through 7 comics. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Cyberforce. I legit, and I didn't see the image thing, I should have known better, but I legit thought this was another Cable comic because it looks like Cable on the front. I'm just saying. it's all right. It was cool. Like, it's got the taste of bad government owns people because they save their lives with cyber stuff. Anyways. That's why it's a meh. I'm like, I don't... those stories never tickled my fancy.
Excuse me.
And then let's talk about Hit Girl number 2, which was hilarious. I mean, the first opening in this comic is her running away, screaming, holy shit, like, holy shit, a cheetah. Who the hell has a cheetah in their house?
Nice.
And
nice.
Then getting mad because she had to kill all these animals, so she wants to blow the dude's face off. I'm like, all right. And it seems like Mano and her get along pretty well until she finally says, we're going to start killing people you like now.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, she's a... Oh, and there's, like, this great bit with comics in it, and her and them talking about Batman. She's like, I never really cared for... She's like, Superman's pretty great, but me and my dad always liked Batman. And they talk about how she liked Marvel, too. Or she was more Marvel and her dad was more DC. It's
pretty
great.
That's pretty awesome.
It's a good moment. And then I read Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider number 1. I thought it was going to be... This comic was going to be more about him traveling his way through hell. No, he travels through hell in his first moment, and now he's the king of hell. And I'm like... You know, this is...
Johnny Blaze is the king of hell.
Yes, he manages to get to the throne.
Happened to...
He ends up getting split from the Ghost Rider, and he manages to talk him back into pairing with him, which I still can't see how he managed to do that.
Interesting.
So, I've never read a Ghost Rider comic. I haven't been...
Unpopular opinion? My Ghost Rider is Danny Ketch.
Probably unpopular opinion.
I don't give a fuck about any Ghost Rider.
That's fair. And this one, I like read this and I was like, okay. Huh. It's alright, I guess. It gave me a nice expose at the beginning of it, giving that little flashback of what happened, how he dropped through hell.
Interesting.
And then I read Cable number 155. I didn't know he had a daughter, so that was cool. I don't know anything about Cable.
I didn't know Cable had a daughter.
All right, cool.
The whole X-Men.
The thing that surprised me the most about Cable 155 is the fact that he's had 154 issues before this.
Yeah, I think everybody's
like,
a little
shocked. When did that happen?
The 80s. Actually, I don't think it's great until like 92, but that's besides the point.
But I thought it was decent. I thought it was good. I might read it more. I don't know a whole lot about Cable, so I feel like there were pieces that I was missing, like this thing that attacks him. I have no idea what the hell that is, and I couldn't find anything on it. So I don't know if it's new or no one knows about it. And then I grabbed True Believers Venom Dark Origins for a buck. If you want to know the origin of Venom, it's a decent buy for a dollar.
Little side note, True Believers are they're the reprint issues that Marvel puts out for a buck. They're awesome.
Mm-hmm. This one was pretty good. Yeah. It was really great. I enjoyed it a lot. It freaked me out with Venom a little bit. That origin thing was the first thing it goes for is his eyes. I'm just saying, it's fucking creepy. Then I read Gears of War number 3, Rise of Ram. Still like it. He manages to usurp it, and turns out that the queen is smarter than him, which I'm not surprised because that's normal. But it's still pretty decent. I would honestly prefer probably a comic to why the queen is the queen of the Locust when she's a human. And then I will end with Kick-Ass number 2, just because I think me and Pat both read it. I liked it. The only thing that I have an argument with is the fact of how she becomes a hero.
Yeah.
Because that's, extreme... It seems extremely out of character for her. She's always seemed like one to care about her own and only deal with her own, and then all of a sudden she gives a crap about some kid, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, Kat and I talked about this a little bit before recording, and we kind of agreed that since it is, a six-part issue, they're kind of rushing her into being a superhero a little bit too quickly.
Yeah, I think that's what it is you can't have... I think it would be more if, she somehow happens upon somebody when she's robbing them and releases them. That would make more sense to why she would become a hero than some little kid who's sitting outside her car. Oh yeah, my mom's boyfriend's a dick and he beats me. That's legitimately what it is.
Well, I didn't read issue number 2, but that fits her characterization in the first one as a now single mother. So having the idea of an absentee dad be a driving force to...
I get it. It seemed very... Because, he's talking to her while she's in a car. I don't know. I felt it could have been done better.
Yeah, I think it kind of does reach out. Maybe it was just characterized a little bit poorly because there was no
it's just some real random kid just hanging out and talking to her.
Was she in the suit when he was talking to her?
No, she was in the car just watching some dude.
She was just staking out this place, yeah. And this kid randomly comes up, is like, hey there, what are you doing in your car?
And we called her super cop and stuff. It could have been done a little bit better. I think if she had tried to liberate this kid who was in a gang, I could see that a little bit more.
Gotcha.
But all around, I thought it was a good read.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.
Okay, I think I'll try to do 2 semi-quick hits before we get into our final review. Firstly, Mother Panic Gotham AD.
Yeah!
Number 001. So, I don't know how long they're expecting this one to go, but I hope forever.
Forever would be good.
Awesome.
No more rat fingers.
Yeah. They no more rat fingers. The artist, so the art now actually reflects the style as opposed to the last run when it's this weird, gothic, cartoony kind of look. I need to go back and read all of Milk Wars, because I think she's in some alternate version of Gotham.
So I know
now.
From the Justice League Milk Wars, she is in that. I just didn't really want to read it.
I wonder if AD stands for Alternate Dimension.
Oh,
that would make sense.
Maybe. Yeah, because in this Gotham, there's no Batman.
Batman has disappeared.
The Joker's basically a homeless guy that makes balloon animals on a bench.
Stop killing people because he's not being noticed.
Her mom is in Arkham Asylum now.
Did you read the last little page too where they did the comic, the is that her in this alternate dimension?
This?
No, one more. Back one where they're doing the ad for Gotham and she slices, keep going. That.
This,
yeah. So that final, is that her?
No, that's
I don't know who that is.
That's her main nemesis. Gosh, I'm forgetting her name right now.
Because they did change
psychopathic artist.
They did change. Oh yeah, you're right.
Gala.
They did change up some of the stuff in it, and some of the characters don't look how I remember them, and it's probably because it's not the artist before that I read.
Yeah. Well, also this last there's a little three page thing at the end.
I would also like to point out she now has a kid sidekick who stabs people, so.
Yeah, that was great. Like, we were talking about her getting the sidekick and, like, the kid goes in and is now apparently a badass because she fucking just like, rolls around with, like, knives and, like, stabs, like, random guys and totally did, like, the Hit Girl butterfly knife thing, too.
Nice.
And, cool, yeah.
Art imitating art.
Basically, yeah.
It's. I don't know. Mother, I really like it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm. Mother Panic, Jody Hauser.
I love you.
And then next, I'll do Champions number 18. This is the last issue with Mark Waid and Humberto Ramos on it. It's still continuing. I'm really sad to see this team leave, especially Mark Waid, since this is basically his baby. And I'm kind of nervous to see in what direction they go in. Because they mention at the end of this that they started the Champions because they don't want to punch, like, supervillains in the face. Like, that's not the reason. So, like, I can very easily see this, like, very powerhouse team going and punching supervillains in the face, and we'll see how close they stick with it.
I think we should let Matt hit up what he thought of Doomsday Clock number 4.
Oh, sure.
Real quick, and then I think me and Pat can talk about it.
Last review, let's go ahead and get into Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock number 4, written by Jeff Johns, art by Gary Frank, with the reason it was delayed.
Was it delayed? Okay, I'm not crazy. Alright, I'm missing something.
This was one of the most satisfying individual issues so far of the series, in my opinion.
I would like more Batman, I will say that.
I would like more Batman, but if you're gonna do kind of like a standalone issue, this works really, really well.
Dude, this one kind of horrifies me a lot.
It asks a lot of the reader, which is quite nice. I was lost a little bit in the beginning. Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth between time periods, and it's not until probably about 10 or so pages in where you really realize that that's what you're seeing. So if you go back, you realize you were on one side of the time period. But this is the reveal of Rorschach and who he actually is in this universe. It changes the timeline. Like, there's a lot more time that has passed since the end of Watchmen to now than I had originally thought. Like, we're talking about, like, 5 or 6 years? Is it 7 years?
Six or seven, yeah. Well, yeah. I think in the very first issue it says that they leave the Watchmen universe in 1992.
I think it was a little bit unclear about when, like, how far past that was. Like, if there was a timeline change.
Oh, no. It's still definitely consistent. Because the original Watchmen, I think, takes place in somewhere between 85 to 87.
Okay, so that would be almost
Five to 7 years.
Yeah. This was just a really, really solid issue. There's a lot of questions still that I have.
There's a lot of build-up, so either I'm really hoping that this build-up leads me to something satisfying, though with the writings lately, it's with the writing in it, they've been doing fairly well with it, so.
I think, this is a tough read, too. Like,
it really is.
There's question of sanity, like, really in all characters in this issue.
Like, there's a lot of, like, really interesting parallels and, like, the very subtle.
It's also it's a lot of mental health based stuff in this too, and I will say maybe be a little careful on some of it because it can maybe be triggering for some people, so.
Well, I mean, his story is pretty sad.
Oh, like, yeah.
He's in an, I'm trying to find the right words. He's been sent back mentally because of the explosion.
Oh, yeah, he has PTSD is what it is.
I think it's more than that. I think there's actually, like, a physical damage that was done.
Oh, yeah, more than likely. But
because of how close, like, he makes a comment that he wished he would have been closer because that would have just killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But instead he was just far enough out to be affected and, like, have speech problems and, just general communication problems with humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not exactly the most popular person to begin with, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I was wondering if there was going to be ties to the psychiatrist, and there is. I mean, he's... If you're listening to this, hopefully you've read this book. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, obviously, our reviews, episodes, spoilers, always. I love the Mothman bits in this, and that was like, and Mothman being a character from the Watchmen universe, one of the old Minutemen, and then when they escape the mental asylum and they burn it down to the ground, how he just like walks into the fire, that was like a really sad chuckle for me, because I was like,
moth to the flame,
he's committing suicide, but yeah, the moth to the flame basically.
Which also parallels the beginning of the mosquito going into the
And then it parallels both the beginning and the end. There's there's like a bug zapper and part of Arkham Asylum, and there's mosquitoes flying into it too, basically,
and then the smoke forming the atomic symbol for Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, and also the bug zapper being blue.
Yep.
And, like, yeah, basically showing, like, people, you know, seeking out their own demise through something that they think is... Which basically is what happened to this new Rorschach when he tried to go after Batman and ended up in Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
A lot of interesting, like, subtle parallels. And then, did you read the letters at the end of the issue?
I was just like, I need a magnifying glass for this shit. I'm gonna make my eyes worse.
They're from the Mothman to his sister. And, like, as it goes on, like, they start off very formal, like, "Dearest Betty, I wish you were well. It's been sad to not hear from you all these years, but I still will write to you every week," like, very thing, and then in the end it's just like, "This is my last letter to you, thanks, I'm done, bye." Like, they get shorter and shorter as they go on, and less formal, and there's more, like, cross out errors and, like, stains on the... These are, like, very interesting supplementary materials, too, for people who are fans of the original Watchmen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow, and he's been in there for a long time. Is this 1962?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been in there for, what is it, like, 25 years almost. Yeah, because each letter is dated. Yeah. This 1982, so he's been in there for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just, like, escapes every now and then.
Did we ever figure out a time frame for the universe that they're in now?
No. We still are not sure what... If there's a time travel element. There seems to be, because they left in 1992 from the Watchmen universe, but it seems like we're farther ahead in our universe if we're in our universe.
Mm.
And that's another big question. I think people make the assumption that we are.
By our universe, you mean the DC.
Yeah, the DC Rebirth the universe. Yeah. Rebirth, I guess, would be Earth Zero, so to speak.
Yeah,
I'm not sure which Earth
they're on. I don't think anybody knows.
It seems like whichever DC world Earth they're on, it's...
Didn't you say that Batman had the new 52 costume, though?
Batman has a different costume than anything I've ever seen.
Okay. I couldn't remember. I swear that you mentioned that in one of the other comics when they met, but I couldn't remember.
I wasn't sure which costume it was, and then the one that they actually give him a pseudo reveal, it's a symbol I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
Really cool looking, but...
I do want to make a quick shout out, though, to Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Shattered Grid. If you haven't read it, you should. This, like, speaks to a lot of, like, my Power Rangers from when I was a kid. You run into Power Rangers Time and Space in the first episode, and I would also like to point out this is definitely a Power Rangers for the adult fan. Because there is legitimate life and death stakes. Legitimate, straight up, I'm not going to ruin it, but there are life and death stakes in this. I also want to point out that the one thing everybody always hoped for in the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers does happen in this comic, which has a very sad ending to it. But either way, read it, it's worth your time. I'm probably going to go through because I haven't been keeping up with it. And grabbing the old issues. Plus, the cover is badass. I want to like wallpaper my house with this.
Awesome.
But for those who don't know, Shattered Grid is Tommy from another universe, an older version of Tommy from another universe named Lord Drakon. He's still evil. and he actually manages to get both the White Tiger and Dragonzord keys put into one. So I'd say if you love Power Rangers, even if you don't, I would read it. It's definitely a decent story. It's a Power Rangers for the adult fan. It's pretty grand.
Sweet. Awesome. All right. Well, with that said, I guess let's say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Good night.